constant. That's a good, you know, some days you may have some days you think are bad. So remember a day like this. You had a wonderful, wonderful day. We're tonight going to look at a sermon that I seldom preach. In fact, I've been preaching a long time, lots of years, and very, very, very few times, probably I could count them on one hand, have I ever preached on tithes and offerings. But this happens to be in this series of about 17, 18 sermons that I've been preaching on financial responsibility, and this just happens to be the one. So I thought, I'm going to walk through this particular truth tonight. You could say that I'm going to enter in where angels fear to trod. However, I'm not going to just rush in to do it. I know how people get really nervous when the subject of giving money to a church comes up. I mean, it's like, it's time for fear and trembling for sure here. But I do not enter this subject tonight lightly. I do it because it's part of the Bible. It's just a part of the Bible. If you're going to preach the whole of the Bible, then you have to get here sooner or later. And for me, it's kind of getting later, so I thought, well, it's time to do it. And I think that the subject is very appropriate in light of where our church is. Thank God for our church and how he supplied our needs and how that you, especially you people who are sitting in this room tonight, have honored God with your substance and made it possible for us to have a building like this and a piece of property like this and have staff here, pastor and a man to help here and to just take care of the affairs of this church. Usually at the end of the year, we don't have very much, if any, left over. But then, praise the Lord, we're able to pay the bills around here. Isn't that a good thing? And in the book of Nehemiah, particularly toward the end of the book of Nehemiah, chapter 13, verses 11 and 12 talk about what happens when God's people do not honor God with the tithe. The work of God basically falls into a disarray. And the people who are supposed to be studying and preaching the Word of God, like me, they have to get out, most of them do, and get secular jobs, and we can't pay the various bills. Then bad things happen. Tell me tonight, how many churches in existence today were in existence during the time of the Bible? There they are. I hear people say, well, bless God, it's a large church, and if he's willed that it last, it'll last. I think you need to examine your head. You know, what about all those churches? What about the one in Ephesus? What about the one in Corinth? I mean, these churches that are called the Church of the Living God, you know, there are books addressed to those churches. Every one of them died. Every one of them died. Do not think that Northwest Baptist Church is immune to that. This church could die, and I hope it don't. Certainly in my life, I'd like to see it be here when Jesus comes, but there's no guarantee that it will. And one thing that will certainly hasten its death if it dies prematurely is that the Lord's people, number one, do not reproduce themselves by bringing new people to the Lord, and number two, they do not honor God with their tithes and their offerings. So, do not assume that a message on tithes and offerings mean that they're both the same. Tithes and offerings are both about giving, but they're talking about two aspects, two different parts of giving. Both involve the giving of money and the giving of other material goods, not just limited to money, but they are separate categories of material giving. This is tonight what I will call a no-frills sermon. You know, rousements and all the things that sometimes preachers have a propensity to put into a sermon that are attention-getters and they shouldn't always be, but I mean, it's just a straightforward, clear-cut, very forthright sermon on this Bible subject. And the question is not whether or not we should tithe and give offerings. The question is whether or not we do it. We know we should. It's just a matter of whether we do. And so I will talk and hopefully give us good reason for wanting to do it. I want to begin this message, and what you might think is a little out of place start It's really not, I think. It's in Matthew 22 and verse 21, where Jesus is doing the talking, and he says, "Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's." This is not a passage directly dealing with tithes and offerings. This, not, this particular one isn't. But it is a passage on the handling of money, a portion of which is God's. He makes that very clear here. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Part of the money, as I indicated in a sermon recently, reason God gives us, four reasons he gives us money. One is to meet our personal needs, another is to pay taxes. This is a part of it right here. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. A part of the reason God gives is to pay taxes, and that's not altogether a bad thing. However, it has been greatly abused. It is a good thing to have government and a structure of government to provide some infrastructure and safety, security from people like Adolf Hitler and others in this world and who have been in this world who would love to destroy all free people. And in our case, I do think America is in a state of destruction, not because we're at some outward military struggle with another country, what we would call an open hostile war, but we're at war with forces that would undermine our system of government and take us down. And I think we're eroding from the inside. It's been well said of Rome that they didn't suffer a defeat because some foreign people came in and invaded them and destroyed the nation of Rome. They crumbled from on the inside. And if you've studied much history of them especially, you can see how that happened. So tonight we're going to talk about that portion of the money God entrusts to us, which is really his, that he wants us in turn to voluntarily put into his treasury. We're going to take a look at rendering unto God the things that are God's. And first, going to talk about, in this rather flat-footed or no-frilled sermon, about tithes, just plain old tithes addressing this issue. Here is a straightforward Bible information session that's about to start this minute on tithe, just on the subject of tithe. Tithe means tenth. It's not some fancy word. It just means tenth. It's what it is. All the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy unto the Lord. The tenth shall be holy unto the Lord. Leviticus 27, that's verse 30. And it is repeated, similarly, at least, in verse 32. So the tithe is 10% of one's income. And you're looking at an Israeli thing here, but there is a principle here that I think predated Israel and I think is postdated Israel. Just looking at what a tithe is, we're talking about a tenth. That's what God's calling it here. And note that the paying of the tithe is a command. It is not just a suggestion that we ought to, you ought to consider doing this. It is what I expect of you. That's what God says we ought to do. It's to be placed into God's treasury first. Yeah, into his treasury first. Before money for personal needs, taxes, or the poor, those other three reasons that he gives us money. It's a part of what Proverbs 3, I think, in verse 9 and other passages called the first fruit of all thine income. It's where we just say, okay, this is, Lord, you have a plan, and this is part of your plan, so this is how it goes. I give your portion to you to start. Proverbs 3 and verse 9 talks about the fact that we're to pay upon the increase. I've had lots of people through the years ask me what we should pay on. Well, we pay on the increase. If this week you didn't see any increase, well, then you don't pay any tithe. But if you saw some increase, whether it was your job or whether it was with an investment or in some other way, then that's what the Bible says. The first fruits of thine increase, that I understand to be talking about our method of giving before the Lord, and it's to be paid into the storehouse. Now you talk about a place of no man's land that has been controversial. What is the storehouse? Well, I do not believe the storehouse is the radio preacher, and I do not believe that it is some universal church, invisible or visible. I understand the Lord's church, which is a local called out assembly of baptized believers, is the storehouse. This is where people ought to be members of one of those churches somewhere, and the tithe then is to be brought into there, and that is the storehouse. I remember a church where I was some years ago, and there was some ambiguity about tithing and giving offerings. And in fact, the first meeting, I was preaching a revival in this particular church. It's kind of out in the country. And after the service, it's customary, the pastor and the visiting a preacher stand at the back door. And when people came by, they would shake hands. We kind of do that today. Except in this case, somebody came by, and when they shook hands with me, there was something in that hand. And I didn't know what. I dropped it. I mean, just reflex. I didn't know. I thought it was a roach, or I don't know what it might be in my hand. You know, I just knew. And so I just dropped it down. And it was some money. And what I learned is that's the way they paid the preacher. They just put some money into the preacher's hand. And, you know, whatever it was is what was his love offering, as they called it, for the day. But I also learned that that's the way they paid the pastor, and that's the way they did most of other things. Now, this happened to be a community where there was good farming, and some dairy farming especially was prevalent out there. And a lot of people had 600-800 acres of land, and they were doing pretty well. And I remember after I was there hearing the pastor that came onto the scene, and there's some upheaval over this, trying to teach them the principle of giving in a proper sense, giving a systematic way into the church, it being the storehouse of the Lord. And I remember one of those old guys saying, well, I give the Lord his tithe and his offerings, and it's down there in my bank account at the bank. And he named the city and where the bank was. Well, I thought, I don't believe you found that between Genesis and Revelation anywhere in there. That's just not in the Bible, you know. But that is the way some people have thought, and it certainly makes for a not too good a way of financing the business of the Lord and paying the bills and keeping the ministry healthy and alive. So the storehouse is the Lord's church. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, saith the Lord in Malachi chapter 3 and verse 10. And that's the church. No question about today that the Lord's place of business is not the temple, and it's not a tabernacle, and it's not our bank. It is the Lord's church. Unto him be glory in the church throughout all ages, world without end. And that's just talking about the reality that God established a church. It superseded the temple, which superseded the tabernacle. The church is the place where the Lord meets with his people today. It's the place where we're to assemble. It's the place that he's promised to bless as he's the head of the church. And he says, it's my institution for carrying out my work. You get people saved, baptized, and taught the great truths of the Bible through the work of the church. And it is to be financed as such. And a part of that, I believe, is the tithe. Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store, as God has prospered him. 1 Corinthians chapter 16 and verse 2. And I understand that to be talking about an offering, but if I understand the principle is, as God increases us, we say, okay, God, I will give you the first. This will be what I'll place into your house, the tithe. It's to be paid regularly into the Lord, not later when we decide to, when there's a need. By the way, a little footnote on that way of financing revivals and churches and pastors that was going on at that church. It's been fairly typical of a good many, especially rural churches, but not altogether rural churches. Down in the history of churches, at least in America, was that when they decided they didn't like the pastor for one reason or another, they just kept the tithe in the bank until the church didn't have any money and the pastor couldn't stay on and he had to go on down the road somewhere. That was a little easier to do than to just vote him out, you know, and throw him out, which sometimes churches do that. It's a sad way that politics works and rules in a lot of churches. And then usually on the next Sunday or two after They got rid of the guy by just starving him out. They got rid of the guy. They'd have a really big offering and then really brag about what a great offering they had. That's the reason a lot of kids grow up and don't want to go back to church where their mom and dad went to church. Just stuff like that and politics that get into churches. Well, this says giving should be proportionate. It is as God has prospered him, and I cannot think of any better way than a 10% tithe across the board, whether you have a little or a lot. You know, you're just as honoring God by giving. If you just made a dollar, you give a dime on a dollar as if you made $1,000 and gave $100 on that. It's a proportionate thing that's designed not to discriminate against anybody or everybody. The tithe is paid by every one of you. Let every one of you lay by him store as God has prospered him. No one is exempt. No one is exempt from the maintenance of the work of the Lord, the Lord's church, where he has given it his name and where he's the head of the body and he is the savior of the body. It's to be paid by everybody. And this is sometimes a little hard to swallow. If I understand the principle of giving just right, in 2 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 7, we're not to give grudgingly or of necessity, for God loveth a cheerful giver. And that sometimes is a little hard. Well, God, I'm going to give it to you, but I'm going to be bitter about it. Well, you sure not be. It ought to be a joy. I mean, when I think about how good God has been to me for all these years, I think, okay, Lord, I had no reason for me to grumble and complain about giving, which is really your rightful portion. Tithing is a biblical principle. I do not think it's just an Old Testament principle at all. From the earliest days of Genesis, I mean, right off the bat in the first book of the Bible, God's people were paying tithe to the Lord. Hebrews says in chapter 7, Melchizedek, king of Salem, priest of the Most High God, met Abraham returning from the slaughter of the kings and blessed him, to whom also Abraham gave a tenth part of all, verses 1 and 2. You know, Abraham, way before Moses, way before the Levitical law, wherein tithing was laid out here, but back here, there was something called tithing going on, and you see it right here. Jacob vowed a vow saying, if God will be with me and will keep me in the way that I go, he will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on, so that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God, and of all that thou hast given me, I will surely give the tenth unto thee. Genesis 28, verses 20 and 22. Yeah, here is way back there, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. A long time later comes along Moses and the law of Moses, but way back here is this Old Testament guy who was a little squirrely himself saying, I'm going to honor God with the tenth, Lord. I'll just give this portion to you. I know you bless me, and it'll be because of you that I ever get back here in the first place. So I will honor you with my substance. And this was hundreds of years before the law of Moses. When God gave the Levitical law, he instituted tithing right as an integral part of this Levitical law. Listen to it. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 17, think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am come not to destroy, but to fulfill. Here is before the law. You know that in the law is tithing. And now here's Jesus coming along. He said, I didn't come to do away with everything. You know the law cannot save you, but I didn't do away with eating right. I didn't do away with being moral. The Ten Commandments are not out of date. You can now somehow, you can now use the Lord's name in vain, and you can cheat on your wife, and you can covet, and you can do all these things like stealing. No, he said, I didn't come to destroy the law, but I came to fulfill the law. I am come not to destroy it. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 17, he specifically said that tithing should not be omitted. I mentioned to you not long ago, I think just a Sunday or two ago, from Matthew chapter 23 and verse 23, where Jesus is talking to the Levitical people in front of him, the priesthood that was in his day. They thought at least they were Levite scholars and lawyers and doctors in the law and knew all about the law. In Matthew chapter 23, I want you to hear his words. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These you ought to have done, and not to leave the other undone. What is really important? What is more important than tithing? Judgment. What is more important than us putting a good deal of money in the church? Mercy and faith. I mean, that's where it's in the heart, where things ought to be right in the heart. Just to put in of your substance or of your abundance, I mean, because you're a rich person or because you can show it off where everybody can see, get out here and make a big deal. God condemns that. He says what you do ought to be from the heart. You ought to sing from the heart. You ought to pray from the heart. You ought to preach from the heart. You ought to be involved with your heart in it. It shouldn't be ever half-hearted. None of us should do anything half-hearted. And giving should be from the heart, out of that cheerful heart. He says that's the way it ought to be done. Judgment, mercy, faith, out of the heart. But he didn't say, you ought to quit the giving. I was thinking, and I do too much of that sometimes, I was just thinking about how people, they have a tendency to want to do away with good things like church and the right kind of church because there have been some flaws in it. I mean, like, okay, there's a big thing. I'm not going to put Baptist on the name because there have been so many Baptists. Baptists have gotten a bad name. And I think to myself, did you ever see any gluttons? Why don't we do away with food? Because gluttons have messed a thing up. Why don't we do away with water? Because the people have drunk too much water and poisoned the water. And why don't we do away with sex? Because there's people who have messed that up, die off in one generation. I think, you know, some people get too high and holy for their own good. Good heavens, I mean, here's the Bible, it's saying, we ought, just because there are people who've been unjust and abused giving, and there have been churches that tried to extract every cent they could out of everybody they could, and because there are television evangelists and other preachers who preach a prosperity gospel, we ought to just quit giving. That's ridiculous. The whole concept is over, out of balance and irresponsible, that it hardly bears even enunciating what I'm doing here tonight. I'm just simply saying, people say, well, I don't believe we ought to tithe. I think, well, hello, how do you suppose God's work ought to be financed? You say, well, it ought to be given out of the heart. Well, give the tithe out of the heart. Give your offerings from the heart. It's a principle that is not just Old Testament, and especially Levitical. It's been around a long, long time. When God gave the Levitical law, like I said, it was in it, but it certainly was after the Levitical law. Tithing permeates the Bible, all of the Bible, it seems to me, and you just can't miss it. And tithing is God's basic means, really, of financing his work. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse, that there may be meat in mine house, saith the Lord, Malachi 3. And in verse 10, as you heard read here just a little while ago. In 1 Corinthians, in chapter 9, the 14th verse says, even so hath the Lord ordained that they which preach the gospel should live with the gospel. And it's obvious that there must be a financing plan to the church and to the work of the ministry in the church. There has to be a financing mechanism there. And there's no place that I see where God gives a new one other than the tithe. I mean, it seems to me that is his mechanism. The Old Testament method is assumed, it seems to me, when you get to the New Testament, and tithing solves the problems of many a church and church financing. When you get people giving, then it's going to take care of the bills and take care of the needs. It also solves lots of problems for God's people, because I'll tell you, when people start taking the Lord's money and using it for other things, they usually start finding themselves in big trouble. So I want to now talk a little bit about offerings, just offerings a little bit. They are special gifts. It's like presents, special presents or gifts to the Lord. They are money, They are material gifts that are above the tithe. They're not the offering and the tithe. Remember, they're not to be confused one with the other. Offerings of this type are encouraged, but they're not commanded. So take a moment and locate the 96th chapter of Psalms. 96th chapter of Psalms. And listen to verse 8. Give unto the Lord the glory due his name. Bring an offering and come into his courts. So here is mention of a type of giving which is not like the tithe, which is to be paid, but it's an offering. It's a special gift, special need-oriented, and there are lots and lots of cases of these in the Bible. The Philippians gave to Paul's missionary needs, Philippians chapter 4, verses 14 through 18. Yes, here's a guy who was on the road preaching the gospel. You know about him. You read the New Testament, especially the book of Acts, and there's his name. And there he's going, just planting churches, Johnny Appleseed of the church business. And he's living out there. Sometimes he doesn't have enough to live. So he made tents. That was his vocation. He knew how to do that apparently quite well. And it became necessary from time to time for him to make tents in order for him to be able to continue to preach the gospel. And that should not be something that any preachers ever above. I will tell you that in my lifetime, there have been times when I needed to make a little extra money and I was not above doing it. And I'll tell you, when God called me to preach, he called me to preach. And I'll tell you, when I went to that 11th Street Baptist Church in Beaumont, I think I'd have paid them if I had any money to pay them to let me do it. I mean, I just was so eager to preach the gospel. Fortunately, they were able to pay me just barely enough to survive. But then the church grew and things improved as time went along. You say, well, Brother Hudson, would you have quit preaching had the church not been able to pay you? No way. I'd have kept on preaching. You say, well, where would you have preached? I don't know. I bet you there had been somebody who needed to be. He might have been on the street. But I'm telling you, it's something that God asked me to do, called me to do. He didn't speak to me in some audible voice like I'm talking to you. But I knew that God made it clear to me that it was my job, my vocation in life, to preach his word, and I intended to do that. And I see that precedent right here in the Apostle Paul. He was raised up of God to spread the gospel. And he went out and he did that. And there were churches like this one in Philippi that got behind him, like we're behind Brother Tim Delaney and behind these missionaries, many of whom are represented by these boxes and these missionary letters on the walls around this building here. We're doing it. And how do we do it? We're giving it, are doing it through offerings. Through special offerings. Paul gathered an offering for those needy saints, as I mentioned a while ago in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, in verses 1 through 3. And he taught those who are taught to take care of those who do the teaching to them. Galatians chapter 6 and verse 6. So here are three needs right here. One is missionary needs that I've just mentioned here. One is for people who are in need, needy saints, and one church helping another church, helping some saints over there. And then another being taking care of the person who's giving you the word of God, who gives himself to that ministry, to the study of the word, preparing himself so that he will have something to say when he gets up to preach. Israel gave a great offering to build the temple. Yeah. And also the tabernacle. I mean, it's in the tabernacle's case, Exodus chapter 35, verses 20 through 29. There, it's quite an elaborate building, a very millions of dollars it took really to build it in terms of especially today's money. And they brought in offerings. The people brought in some what would then be their money, but they took earrings and jewelry of various sorts and brought it in. And they brought in certain kinds of skins that would be needed in that building and some wood, specialized wood that would be needed in that building. And then there was money to pay guys like Bezaleel, who's the man who had special ability from God to know how to do all this beaten work in silver and gold and put all of those cherubims and seraphims and those images in there, you know, that he put in there. It was an huge undertaking. And I'm telling you, it's something I've never observed in my life. Never. But I'm telling you, they brought in so much. Finally, Moses said, stop, that's enough. Have you ever seen an offering that was enough? I never have in my life. I'd say hallelujah. For people who are be generous of heart like these, you say, well, they must have been rich people. Well, they just come out of Egyptian bondage. They weren't too rich except for the riches that they were given by God from the Egyptians that they'd taken in there, the riches of Egypt there. But they gave it to the Lord. It was a special free will offering. It was free will in the sense that they were not obligated to do it like they were to tithe. It was something they gave because of gratitude, because of how good God had been to them. King David was not allowed by God to build the temple. He was a man of war. God said, I'm not going to let you do it. David wanted to do it, but God said, no, I'm not going to allow you to do it, but I'm going to let the temple be built by your son, your boy. Okay, David's going to suck his thumb. God, if you won't let me do it, then I won't be any part of it. No, no, no. He was not that kind of person. David said, okay, God, if you won't let me to do it, if you're going to let Solomon, my son, do it, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get all the gold and all the iron and all the silver and all the trees and all everything else he's going to need, because it's going to be a huge, it's going to be a multi-million dollar task to build this temple to me. And I'm going to, David said, get everything together I can to build it. First Chronicles chapter 26. Or 29, verses 6 through 9, Josiah took a special offering. Second Chronicles 35, verses 7 through 10. Asa took an offering, Second Chronicles 15, 10 through 11. All of these were offerings to build and upgrade the house of the Lord. You know, I look around right here, and I'm just grateful for this auditorium. I'm grateful that we have a nice ceiling in here and good sound equipment in this room. And, you know, it looks nice. We have some good decorations and fairly new pews and carpet in here. And go outside and good flower beds out there. It looks nice. People down the road can see that it's a well-kept piece of property. And there's tile back there, tile back here. And, I mean, floor tile, new restrooms, which are not so new anymore, but they've been redone. I mean, it's just good. You know how we did it? At Northwest Baptist Church, we did it on special free will offerings. There are some people who brought special money in here, and they put it in the treasury for the specific purpose of improving the appearance of this place where we meet with God, this house of God. It's a principle. It's right here in the book. It's a special type of giving to the Lord. You just see that God promises to honor those who give him of their heart, give out of the heart, giving to his work, not just giving to his work, but giving in general, but especially giving to his work. Actually, our giving to God will impact our whole life. Well, I think you can look at a person's record of giving to God, and it's going to tell you something about how that life has gone in other areas, not just inside church, but outside of church. Withholding God's money will always hurt us. We'll always end up suffering as a result of that. The tithe is holy unto the Lord. You remember that? Leviticus 27 and verse 32, holy. It means it's set apart. God said, I set it apart to be my part, to be mine. He set it apart, and we'd do well to do the same. And I do that. Margaret and I have been doing it, as I've told you before, for a long time. And he views withholding his part as robbery. You heard it back there. He told that to Israel in Malachi, as Bob read a while ago in chapter 3, verses 8 and 9. You know, you can be rich and miserable. You say, well, I'd like to try it. I've known a few rich people, not a whole lot. I won't say ever, I've known only one or two that I thought had very much peace in their heart. Nearly every one of them wanted more. And some of the very richest ones that I knew, they were the most miserable ones that I knew. Just seemed like it just couldn't be happy with anything, a new house, a new multi-million dollar estate or whatever, just never were really happy. And James talks about that. I want to turn your attention to the fifth chapter. It's in the book of James, and it's right after Hebrews. So take a moment with me, and let's journey there, and let me read these verses. Just think it be good for you to hear them right out loud and get the very idea from God Himself. So chapter 5, here are verses 1 through 6. Go to now, you rich men. Weep and howl for your miseries that shall come upon you. Your riches are corrupted, and your garments are moth-eaten. Your gold and silver is cankered, and the rust of them shall be a witness against you. And you shall eat flesh as it were fire. You have heaped treasure together up for the last day, or up treasure together for the last days. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which of you is kept back by fraud, crieth, and the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of Sabaoth. Ye have lived in pleasure on the earth and been wanton. You are nourishing your heart. You have nourished your hearts as in a day of slaughter. You have condemned and killed the just, and he does not resist you. I think you can hear as you read that passage just misery. I mean, here's just people who are rich but who've been miserable because they couldn't get their bearings straightened out and realize God is the hand that feeds me. He doesn't expect very much of me, but he has a job to get done, and it's his work on earth, and I'm to give some of what he's entrusted to me to him for that work. But if I get greedy and start taking his and start taking from others and start covetousness in my heart, it'll rob me of joy. It'll take away my blessings. I will not have that freedom in my heart and that peace of God that passeth all understanding. We're not talking just about lost people out here. Yeah, some of them there too. But I'm talking about Christian people, because greed is not limited to sinners who have never trusted Christ. There are God's people who can become robbers of the work of God, of the substance that really belongs to God, and it always comes back to bite. In fact, as you remember, it's Proverbs chapter 11, verse 24, that talks about withholding more than is meat, and it tendeth to poverty. And there's more types of poverty than financial poverty. There's poorness of spirit. I'm not talking about the poor in spirit, but I'm talking about people who have lot, but whose spirits are all poor and destitute and have no joy, as I've indicated. God promises to bless people who honor him with their substance. And I'm not about to stand here and preach some prosperity gospel to you and make you think, well, if you put a dollar in the plate, God will give you 10 or 100 or some amount like that. You hear those people talking about that. You don't need to believe that. But I do know that God takes care of those who trust him and honor him in their lives with their substance. That doesn't mean you can neglect work and expect God to take care of you. It doesn't mean that you can squander away and fail to employ good, sound business management principles with what he does entrust to you and expect to have all of your needs met. God expects us to be responsible. He expects to take care of business. We can't goof around and expect God to shower us with blessings. But when our heart is right, and we do it God's way and honor him with our substance, then he can give us joy in our hearts. Malachi 3 and verse 11, that last verse that Brother Bob read up here a while ago. Sometimes we get so intent on the first verses before it that we fail to, he says, I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the first fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, saith the Lord of hosts. Here's a little footnote of what God's saying. And look, I can take care of you. If I know how to feed the sparrows, and I know how to put all these clothes on these trees called leaves, if I can take care of the wild beast of the field like I told Job I could do and didn't need a veterinarian out there to do it, I'm the God who made this place. And he said, I know how to take care of you. And if you'll trust me and honor me, then I'll see that you are taken care of and your needs are met. Ms. H and I sometimes talk about things. We're like most of you, I suppose. We get sometimes so busy we don't have time to talk. We're the only couple that gets there. You know, life's so busy, especially since the invention of cell phones and texting and all that. But every now and then we talk. And in our whole lives, we never had a big income, lots of money. But early on, when we married each other, we were already into it, actually tithing. Just honoring God with our substance. And the Lord is my witness. In my ministry, the whole years in our ministry together, my goal has never been to make money. I've seen preachers that were entrepreneurs on the side, and they were buying and selling cars and trading and had businesses of various sorts going on. Maybe I'm a little slow, but I never had time to do all that, I can tell you. It's just the ministry in the pastor of the churches has consumed me and my time, my energies. That doesn't mean that I haven't tried to be a good manager and, you know, and invest and do a few things with what he did give me. But I am just, the Lord knows my heart. I'm telling you the truth from my heart that I never have been in my whole ministry set on making lots of money. I want to be a good steward of what I did have, but it just hasn't been my aim. It hasn't been my goal. And yet, do I look like I'm starving? You know I don't. Do I look like we look like that we're... God has blessed us. I'm not, right, I'm just telling, we don't have a lot of leftover, but God has given us enough to have a place to live, a home that's comfortable, and we have plenty of food, probably more than we really need, and we're wearing suits, you know, and nice clothes. You know, my feet got in such a trouble here a ways back that I had to get some orthopedic shoes, man. I had enough money to actually buy a pair of way too high orthopedic shoes. Sometimes you put that insole in there. I mean, we had enough money to do it. When we've needed to go to the doctor, she's got a robotic knee. The right knee is a metal knee inside of her. Titanium, I think it is. You'd think I've been trying to get ahead. I've been trying to serve the Lord. Been trying to honor God with substance, the material, in every way, but with the substance, with the money, and honor him with our tithes, and give offerings above our tithes. I don't ever see the giving records of this church. Our treasurer, Brother Al Pitts, he's walked in back there. And Brother Richard Kovach, these guys, they with Wayne Thomas and some others, they watch over this stuff. So I'm not back there seeing who's giving what to the Northwest Baptist Church. And, you know, we're going to get rid of you. We're going to come to you and do, you know, some billing. If you know. No. But these guys can tell you that Margaret and I not only give our tithes, but we honor God with offerings. We give mission to offering. We give some to building. We give some usually to charitable helps around here. And, you know, the kind of things that go on. You say, do you regret that? No way. I don't know how many cars I've had, but a sizable number of vehicles we bought and paid a good deal of money for cars. And did you know that right now we just have two of them left? I mean, they're running down and bought one from a Toyota place and they're always sending me something. Come in, and your Toyota is worth this much on the trade-in. And I'm thinking, that is a fourth of what it cost. Not even a fourth, probably now, of what it cost. I'm wearing some suits. I finally lost enough weight where I can get back into them. I feel like I got some brand new ones. I'm wearing some old suits that got too little, and now they're fitting again. A whole lot of clothes we took to Goodwill. In fact, when we moved from Creek Hickory, where we had lived for 26 years, to Emerald Garden Lane, where we live now, I gave truckloads. I literally took truckloads of stuff to Goodwill and then threatened to leave some of it in the attic for those people to realtor didn't want that to be done. I mean, every dime, every tithe and every offering I ever gave to the Lord is in the eternal bank of heaven. All the rest of that stuff is going away. But what you lay up treasure with God in, it's going to stay around. And not only is it in the bank of heaven, you say, what are you going to do with it when you get over there? Just praise God with it. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I just am glad that I'm going to heaven. But you know what I do know is, by giving some mission offerings, the people like David Holland, he went there, this plain, ordinary guy that's not much in terms of pulpit preaching, but is a giant when it comes to talking to people one-on-one. He went into the hills, I mean up to Karamuya village in the highlands of New Guinea, Papua New Guinea. And he got up there, and he began to talk to people about the Lord, and the most unlikely scenario, he won a guy named Kimmon to the Lord. And Kimmon had a family, and after a while, Kimmon surrendered to preach, and it went on, and it just like taffy candy, it just chewed it, and it got bigger, and it just multiplied. And Margaret and I went over there to actually visit him on the field and see it, and we saw 200-300 people at every service come in there to hear the preaching of the Word of God. And Brother Holland had a guy there. Brother Holland interpreted into Pidgin English, another trade language over there. And then because, you know, there's 600 different tribal languages around there, plus 600, he got another guy to come in and interpret again into a tribal language. Do you know how long it takes to preach a 30-minute sermon when you've got to get 30 minutes to interpret in one language, 30 minutes more into another language? I preached an hour and a half. You say, nothing strange about that, brother. I said, well, I understand what you're saying. I'm just telling you, I preached a long time. I mean, we did over there. And we did it in the morning, we did it in the afternoon, and then we did it at night. And people stayed around after it was over to go. They wanted to hear more. Why is he quitting? Well, it's been a long time for an American over here. It's not used to long services like that. I saw little children. And from that church, you know, no cars up there. We had to fly in a little missionary aviation airplane and land on a grass strip. Pretty hairy. Margaret was holding my hand like they broke it. We got in there, got out, and I went with him walking one or two afternoons. And we walked to a village over here, just outside this village, where there was a church that had been planted by this church. And another church had been planted by that church. You know what I'm saying? I'm glad I could invest in this man. I'm glad I could give something above my tithes to missionary offering. For everything I put into a house note, into a car note, and into the bank, it's going to stay here. But what I'm investing over here is eternal. There's some souls saved. There's some little black boys from Papua New Guinea and some little girls who'd have never heard the gospel and would have died without Christ and spent eternity separated from him had it not been for the privilege of investing in the work of our great God. Tithes and offerings. And by the way, the last part of what I just said to you is all free. It wasn't in my notes, but I just had to tell you. I'm for it. God's for it. Tithes and offerings. It's not a bad thing to do. But you don't think, need ever anybody think, that you can just give tithes and offerings to the church and that's going to cure everything. What you give to the Lord's church and to the furtherance of his work through missions and other special projects is going to be pretty empty if it doesn't come from a right heart that prevails in all of your giving. Your whole life is a life of giving. Well, it's time for me to stop, and we will observe the Lord's Supper. So I'm going to ask Brother Frank and these men to come.